Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. I'm happy to say I've got Ruth Beaglehole here in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tonight at the old school at 7 o'clock, there is a Parenting with Nonviolence session. You are the founder of Parenting with Nonviolence, So everyone would be excited to have you here. Just tell us before we get into a little bit of detail about Parenting with Nonviolence, what's the session going to be about?
Well, you know, the session is for anybody.
Yes, so first of all.
People who are new, people who've been before. And one of the focuses is going to be on what we call bi-paradigm parenting. Mm-hmm. So we are about shifting the paradigm from a dominant power over disciplinary, more authoritarian framework to shifting it to being about connection, attachment, so looking at children's behavior from a different lens about what core basic needs their behavior is trying to meet. And I know from my experience there are many partnerships where there's struggles about one parent believing it's permissive and the other one believing that we should have more discipline and we're not disciplining and you know our children are running ragged and we're going to pay the price. And so how to dialogue about that in families and how to sort of come to some sort of reconciliation about that, because for children – that's kind of crazy making, you know.
Well, the parents are on a different page.
They're on a different page. It's confusing, it's upsetting, it's hurtful, it's fearful, produces fear. So how do we bring that out into the open? And, of course, that will take us into whatever's alive in the room, you know, whatever issues are alive for people in the room.
I know we didn't know about the term parenting with nonviolence when we started parenting, but we were going along that path basically, and luckily we were united, me and my wife, on that front.
Yeah.
But extended family wasn't united on that front.
Yes.
So you still get your bi-paradigm results, especially with the grandparents who.
Yes.
But it's funny because you're parenting differently; it's automatically a challenge to what they did.
Absolutely.
It's automatically pushing buttons. So.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's. It's not as big a challenge because they're not in the house all the time, but it still is a challenge.
And, you know, I think it's a little bit of a la-la land belief sort of system that we're all going to be on the same page all the time.
Yeah, you're saying we should get real, Ruth.
Yeah, we should get real. It's really not. And so, you know, conflict modeling in families is incredibly important for the children's sort of understanding and knowledge about managing conflict. So moving away from seeing conflict as bad and should be suppressed and anger should be suppressed to really looking at how to have these difficult, sometimes hard conversations in families, what's appropriate for children to hear, what's not appropriate for children to hear. You know, how do we have these? Because this is groundwork for children. You know, this is groundwork. When I was growing up, I never heard resolutions of things. That wasn't a model that I knew. I think most of it was suppressed, actually. And, when I had my own children, inevitable conflicts, aren't there? You know, people talk to me all the time about their two children fighting and caring and having difficulties. And so how do we actually, what can we model in our adult relationships? And when we agree to disagree, how do we do that? Is that out in the open with children? Do they know mummy does it this way or my other mummy does it this way? My daddy does it this way? My other daddy does. You know, how is that talked about?
And that conflict resolution or that dealing with not sweeping things under the rug, that's our New Zealand culture. We particularly have trouble with that. You were raising kids in the U.S. when you were doing that. Is it much different in U.S. culture or California culture? Back in the 60s?
You know, that's a...
Or 70s?
I can't really talk about the bigger culture. I can talk about the families I was around.
Yeah.
I had a community preschool with lots of parent involvement, lots of struggle with conflict. People, you know, we all have our narratives. We all bring how we were raised. And part of, you know, the work in this nonviolent parenting is really to think a lot about What are our triggers? What are we passing on? Why are we passing those on? What do we do? And of course, we don't have big discussions about modes of discipline. We talk much more about modes of self-regulation and modes of being a co-regulator with our children and building our children's narrative. And so, you know, there's a lot that goes into this topic, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about it.
So that's what you try to do, is when people come to talk about discipline, you steer it into a discussion about regulation, like emotional regulation.
Emotional regulation, physical regulation, you know. Also, how do we manage our impulses and our triggers, and it's also even thought regulation, you know, like how do we manage our, like, this brat, this, you know, this kid, you know, yeah. This kid is always doing this kid is always doing that. How do we manage those thoughts? How do we, and so we have a model called power that we talk about, which always begins with a pause, and we'll talk about that tonight. It's a really, I'm such a believer in having a framework around our parenting, you know, having something that we've thought about. It's a framework, it's our scaffolding. So yeah. When we get stuck, or when we get into difficult places, and when we have joys, we can go back and, well, how does this fit into my framework? And of course, the framework I'm suggesting is one around this beautiful word of nonviolence, which is really about a deep honoring and respect for the dignity of a child and the ownership of how we use our power. And if I have that framework, when I begin to lose it, yep. We all lose it when I begin to, you know, get untethered from my body or from my mind. How do I come back? I have a belief system here. This is my po. This is what I'm holding as I parent. And that's always helpful, rather than, you know, my in-laws tell me to do this, somebody else is telling me to do this, you know, and I'm losing it, and I don't know what I should be doing. No, I have a belief system. I have a framework of thinking.
A lot of the words that we talk about, like brat and terrible twos and a need for discipline, there's almost an assumption behind it that kids are inherently bad, or at least that they're going to, we have to be on the lookout that they're going to be doing bad things, and we have to stop them doing bad stuff.
Yeah,
like a belief. Yeah, it's a belief in them. And I worry about that. Our belief in our kids is possibly even more important than anything else.
I sat in a room recently with a group of parents who had adolescent children, and asked them all the words they've heard to describe adolescence.
Yeah.
And it was really sad, until one parent says, well, isn't anybody going to say anything nice about adolescence?
But there aren't many nice words that we use about adolescence. Know. Even the word adolescent has negative connotations, I feel. It's not a positive, it doesn't feel like a positive term.
Well, it's a stage in development,
that's what it's meant to be. Yeah.
But, you know, when, my kids get to be adolescents, you know, da 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 da. And we have to reframe that language. So much of this work around nonviolence is really reframing terrible twos. Mm. When that two-year-old in the supermarket is just overwhelmed with a need for that toy that's there, a need to, you know, envisioning playing with that need is for play, and is lying on the supermarket floor, and people come by with scathing looks on their look.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, you know? And, you know, that was my kid. I would have already, you know, tapped them on the butt or whatever, you know. So change, being mindful of our labels, being the brat label, you know, that all these words that we use, some in jest, but underneath the jest so often is a disconnecting judgment. And we really, you know, and what's often behind it is parents frustration, parents overwhelmedness, tiredness, extreme tiredness. And there's a concept called the body budget, which is about thinking about, it's from Mona Delahook. She likes the word body budget. It's a little bit too capitalist to me, but the sort of thinking about where our body's at, you know, is it depleted? Do I need to make a payment into it? Which would be sort of like, am I hungry? Am I overtired? Do I really need to ask for support? And where's a child's body budget? What do they need? Do they need something? Is this mother came to me recently before I left LA and was like, I have to talk to you today. I have to talk to you today. And so we met up, yep. And she, very much a practitioner of nonviolence, and yet she'd hit her kid.
Mm.
And, you know, it was just beyond mournful, beyond grief. And then when we unpacked the backstory, you know, the child had told her an hour or so earlier that the child had said, I'm hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. And the mother, well, we're going home, we're going home. We'll eat when we get home. And it was a drive. And by the time they got home, mother got an email to say that the school had lice. And so she decided she was going to sit her child down. The child is still hungry, and she's going to sit and look for lice. And it just went from bad to terrible.
Mm.
And, you know, the backstory, the red flag was happening the first time her child said she was hungry. You know, and like those, when that body budget is that depleted, you know that the child's going to get, the child got completely and utterly dysregulated and did, you know, something that was against the value system of the family. And that mother was just, and that she hadn't, if she'd have stopped the car even for 5 minutes to go onto her bag and get a snack, you know.
Yeah, the way we live our lives, at least in the modern world, doesn't fit with how a developing child works or operates. And like, I can go all day without eating,
yeah,
as an adult, but and you discover when you get kids that that stuff doesn't work. Yeah, and it's not that they are going to become physically unwell. It's the emotional stuff that shows up first.
It's a complete trigger for the dysregulation of the brain, that lower part of survival brain.
Mm.
If they're over hungry, it's about survival. It's not
right.
Just, I need to eat. Could we eat sometime? It's, I need to eat. You know, it's like.
Right. Actually, do you know, I don't remember actually hearing that. That's a key little thing. Like, it is like the survival brain's kicking in.
Yeah.
Like, there's a sense of urgency,
and
maybe panic.
Yeah. And I also understood the mother was caught and, you know, she had to report to the school within a certain time. I mean, there was so many.
There's so much stress on us when we're parenting with young kids. Yeah, like, it's a struggle for everyone, and I think it's important to acknowledge that. But I think I know that one thing that helps, so instead of coming in with the idea in your head that terrible twos are a problem, what you'll be talking about is about emotional regulation and kids are learning
and
how to operate as a human being. And
every child, Aaron, does the best they can. They do the best they can.
Mm.
They're not little, you know, I don't know.
I know what you're going to say.
They're not little people who are,
yeah.
How am I going to really mess up this family? How am I, I can't use some of the other words on radio, but you know, and rather they're doing the best they can. And developmentally, where they are, you know, that, and where they are in their brain, it's all so important to know and understand. And to have that framework. When I, the parent, get so dysregulated, or even actually a little bit dysregulated, what do I do? How do I come back? And we talk a lot about the pause and the breath. Mm. And really self-empathy and self-regulation. How do I manage myself? It's such a huge, impossible journey, isn't it? And you know, and we get through it, and then you have adult kids, and my kids are all in their 50s now, and you look back and you say, wow. Look at that lovely human being.
Yeah. I think keeping your eye on the end goal is important, especially in those times. And I guess, too, we should say, like, having this framework, it doesn't mean that your kids won't have their dysregulated moments, that they won't play up. But I think means you feel differently about it, and you don't carry this heaviness of, I've got this difficult thing in my life. You don't carry that around, I think.
Well, we're not about like for suppression.
Me that was, for me that was the difference.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And so I didn't live in a world where I had this terrible monster in my house.
Right.
Which I feel like you're in danger of going down that road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we're not about suppressing of feelings. And I want to say one more piece about this, which is the bigger modeling around social justice and the bigger modeling about what do we need in this world, you know, when you think about overwhelming racism, overwhelming sexism, all the isms. Right now we have this, you know, just war, terrible stuff going on with Gaza and Israel and Ukraine and all the other wars that, you know, big issues in the world. And I'm really about helping children to grow up, to have a voice, to be voiceful. By knowing they matter, they learn to realize other people matter, and that the principles of nonviolence are ones that I want children in this family. No, we don't hit, you know. When we're upset, we figure out other ways. We practice nonviolence in our family. And that gets translated into children, how children can be leaders and supporters in school spaces and grow up to be activists. I'm unashamedly, is that the word?
That'll
you know,
do. Yeah.
Want children to grow up, to have a voice, to know that they are, can be active in the goodness of the world. I don't want children to grow up and think this world is just horrible and there's no hope and, you know, everybody's just sort of out to get each other. No, I really believe in this social justice model and the core basic human rights that every single person deserve honoring respect. And, you know, and so to me, starting in utero, actually, you know, honoring the child in utero, honoring the child as it grows is a yeah. way of really really contributing to the bigger picture of social justice and a bigger picture.
There's, I mean, we're watching what's happening overseas at the moment, and on my Facebook feed there is an Israeli, one of my people I friended is an Israeli person, and the stuff that's coming through their Facebook feed at the moment is just awful. Like, yeah. it's really, it's dispiriting in the sense that I can see that they're building up on both sides, they're building up generations of people who just hate the other side.
Oh,
like it's in it, and for reasons, they both got reasons to do it. They yeah. both feel frightened, both sides feel frightened about what's coming over the border. I mean, how do you, I mean, parenting with nonviolence here in Aotearoa, we're mostly talking about just what's happened in our lives growing up, and
well, and we can maybe talk about colonization
yeah,
as well.
Well, yeah, we've got that as well. Yeah, but I mean, my personal experiences are just about feeling unheard as a child yeah. and bringing that mm-hmm. into my relationship with my mm-hmm. own children. But this, what's happening there is something that's much, much deeper. Is that how do you work people out of that? You know,
how do you work people out of it? I think it, you know, I just know in LA there's been lots of conversations going on, lots of support. There's a march for children happening next mm-hmm. week for mm-hmm. children to go and sort of support and hold other children in the world. And I think deciding how your family is going to hold these issues is really important. And, of course, you have to be developmentally appropriate, you know. You don't want to put children into places that are too scary or too much information.
Too raw.
And yet, if my belief system, the beauty of nonviolence is that it does have a wider picture, a wider view. And so what's appropriate for my children to know? What's appropriate for them? What would be too much? How to have those discussions? And how to give children a social justice lens. So, you know, in preschools, how the community of a preschool comes together around a child who may be hurting. You know, one of our friends here is hurting. Let's come and be with that child. You know, that's the beginning, isn't it? The power of community, the social justice healing in community. How do we bring those models into the lives of children in a way that can translate as they grow and get into other avenues of learning? They have some core ethic about nonviolence.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, and for you, nonviolence has come from, like, way back to the 60s when that idea was first appearing in kind of Western, or maybe it's first appearing in Western culture. But, I mean, I'm also thinking about the people over in war zones who are left with a burning hatred of the enemy, and which is encouraged by their leadership. Like, How do you introduce the concept of nonviolence into that situation?
Well, you know, there's an underbelly in all of these situations. There are these combatants for peace in Israel who are soldiers who refuse to go to be conscripted
right.
and go fight. And you hear the stories of them going into their Palestinian communities and supporting Palestinians.
Right.
What are the stories we pass on? What are the stories about Palestinians who've been fighting for justice for years and years and years?
For their lives.
You know,
what
are the narratives? How do we find these heroes and heroines to talk about with our children and not just sort of follow the media? You know, the media script of that there's no good people, there are no good, you know, in Israel, no good people in Palestine, they're all hate each other. When there's other realities, you know, that are there, and how do we find them, and how do we, you know,
that actually, see, I didn't know about that. I'm torn because I want to know what's going on, but I don't want to dwell on it for too long because they're not. So I don't know enough, but I do know, I mean, there was a relative of someone who was killed in Israel who was opposed to Israel going and attacking the Palestinians and thought that they're actually critical of the government for not for not working toward peace because they saw that as the ultimate way to be secure in the world. But that's the only thing I've heard. The rest of it has been about the hatred.
Yeah.
And so what you just told me now about the veterans there, the soldiers.
Combatants for peace. Yeah.
That gives me a sense of hope, you know.
Yeah, it does. And how do we, you know, find these stories? And, I mean, I guess I'm in a lucky position to hear some of these stories through my daughter's work. And I'm really, it matters to me to hear them, you know. It matters to me to talk to that my grandchildren know some of these stories. And that there's other voices, and it's a horrible, and it's beyond tragic. It's just what are they saying? 11,000 Palestinian children killed, and you know all the Israelis Israeli teens who were at a music festival. You know, I mean, it's just awful.
Mm.
And so I can't get. And anyway.
Yeah.
I do believe that this. I get challenged a lot of times about the use of this word. Why do you call it parenting with nonviolence? Mm. Why don't you call it gentle parenting? You know, there are all these other parentings out there. Respectful, gentle. You know, and me, that word matters. That has such a deep fundamental meaning to me of an ethic, of a philosophy. It's not just the absence of violence. It's a deep ethic of being in the world and being with each other and this deep honoring respect for the dignity of all human beings and not having the other as, you know, not setting our lives up where there's the other and the you know. And so I don't use the binary words of good and bad, right or wrong, you know. I'm trying to break out of the binary thinking that there's all are deserving.
I think the phrase nonviolence for generations like my generation is not a cliche, but we've kind of got used to it. It's just always been there in the background. But what I've learned from you is, like, when you were, I guess, in your 20s, the concept of nonviolence was something that had emerged in Western culture and was really significant at that time, that it was used as a turning point to deal with a lot of issues.
Well, if you think about the civil rights movement and the end of the 60s and the anti-war movement around Vietnam, and then, of course, the feminist movement, you know, during the early, late 60s and 70s, profound use of the word. And it goes back. You know, I remember when I was in Japan working around domestic violence, you know, they took me to a temple, a Buddhist temple that was over 600 years old, that was actually a woman monk had created as a safe house.
Right.
So, you know, it's old. It goes back, and it goes back to, you know, many, many indigenous cultures and the way they raise children, and the Maori culture, the before it was sort of taken from them and replaced by sort of a more dominant Western framework, you know.
So how much do we know about Māori child rearing techniques, strategies, whatever, terrible phrase, but how that happened pre-European times?
Well, I think there's a lot of embedded knowledge in talking to Māori people and Māori leaders and Māori activists, and finding out that knowledge is something that's
really
important.
You're probably the wrong
important.
Person to ask, but...
Yes, I'm Pākehā.
Yeah.
I am
Pākehā,
the wrong person.
Who's lived in LA for quite a few decades.
And yet, you know, working here with, you know, with Poteria Te Aroha, which is the Māori framework around this work, it's very deep. It's very deep and very... And held in many different ways, and I think people really needs to be talked about, and do an interview with somebody.
Should talk to Katerina.
Bring an interview.
Yeah, because it's just, I mean, one of the things I learned, like I've talked about how when we started parenting, we'd come across concepts that were outside the traditional paradigm, and one of them was looking at how people, there was a book, The Continuum Concept, about some tribes in South America.
Yeah.
Very, very different. So peaceful. Like genuine non-violent culture.
Yeah.
And it's just eye-opening to know that humans can live like that, and that there are so many different paradigms of parenting than the one that we grow up in. We just think that's everything. That's the world of it. But there's so much more out there. And I'm sure that Māori culture pre-European times was very different to what we imagine it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, I think it's the eye-opening thing, the idea, and it gives you the belief that alternatives are possible. And that's what, I mean, you're bringing an alternative, and but that issue of belief, I think, is important, believing that something new will work.
Well, when I talk to so many adults who walk around with their childhood still alive, so alive in them, you know, the pain of the violations, the pain of growing up in an abusive family, pains of divorce, so much pain. How do we reframe some of these pains to break the cycles in our own lives? Yeah. And what do we need to do? And how do we find healing? And where do we find healing? And where is the healing lens in schools? Where's the healing lens in preschools? Where's the healing lens in our family? Holding the healing, always holding that there's possible, but we have to be able to have language. We have to be able to talk about it. We have to be able to not negatify, not have good feelings and bad feelings, but allow all feelings and honoring all feelings in our families, all feelings in our schools, empathy hands, holding our hands in a cupped in front of us to allow whatever a child or adult is feeling to fall into our hands and just hold it. Hold it with deep, honoring respect. Don't throw it over our shoulder and say, you know, well, we don't have those, you know, be good. We don't talk about that stuff in this family, you know. Mm. You're being a bad girl right now or a bad boy. No, stop. And get over the fear that adults we've been raised with fear around feelings. You know, that feelings aren't... Well, they're nice ones. They're good. You know, be happy. We just want happy children. Rather than, you know, oh, my, that feeling raises such discomfort in me. Where does that discomfort come from? How can I breathe through this moment with my child to honor that feeling in my child and be able to hold it for them in a deep, honoring, respectful way? Because we call it balancing of feelings, where we have good feelings and bad feelings, is not helpful to our mental health in the long run.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we're talking to Ruth Beaglehole, founder of Parenting with Nonviolence, and we've reached the end of the show, basically. But, Ruth, you're going to be doing a session 7 o'clock tonight at the Old School Arts Centre. That's Thursday night. And people can just turn up. Is there a charge on the door or anything like that? Do we know? You're not the one organising that, I know. Oh, hold on. Oh, there's a poster across the room. Does that say $5 on the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
Nobody turned away.
Yeah, that's just Koha level. That is, that's all good. This should be fine. And so you're going to talk about, you said at the start of this interview, talking about bi-paradigm parenting, when the parents have a disagreement about the parenting style they should be doing, but people can bring whatever comes up.
Absolutely. Look forward to seeing folks.
Yeah, awesome. And it's not a lecture, folks. It's a round, sit round the room conversation. Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming in, Ruth.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Yeah, end of the show for the day. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back again one last time tomorrow, end of the week.